everybody, and welcome to Tabletop Tales number 12 for the week of April 14th, 2014. I'm your host, Mark Kuznez, and I bet y'all are wondering right now, where are episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 11 of Tabletop Tales? Well, I am just retroactively renaming all the board game focus episodes of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast Tabletop Tales. Since that is basically what that show was, what those episodes were, that is what Tabletop Tales is going to become. I'm going to put those episodes into the individual feed when that is ready to go, and they will just be known as Tabletop Tales from this point on. So that is it. And if you don't like it, well, too bad, because I don't really care. But why don't we actually get to the games and whatnot for this week? I played quite a few different games, and it also helps that there wasn't an episode this past week, as I've been going through the process of these changes and various things. But I did play pretty much, not every version, but almost every version of Timeline, which I'm not sure if it is a new game, but I've only recently seen it. At least the few stores have recently stocked up on it. So Timeline comes in various themes, and the basic setup of the game is you have a initial card that you put face up, and it has a date on it. It has a year, not an extremely specific date, just a year. So it'll say so-and-so happened 1986. That's the year I was born. That's why I use it. So that could be the card. The year Mark Kuznez, Mr. Sausage, was born, 1986. And then everybody has, I think, 5 cards in their hand. It might vary depending on how many people are playing or just how difficult you want the game to be. And all your, on one side of the card is the date. On the other side of the card, there's nothing. There's just the picture and the name of the card, or maybe a description depending on which version it is. And what you're supposed to do is then guess correctly if your current card, or the card that you want to play, is higher or lower. So if you think, you know, whatever, Avatar the movie, when did it come out? Well, that came out after 1986, so you put it on the side, which is where all the cards that go after 1986. And then when, if you're right, which you would be right, because Avatar came out in, what, 2009, I think. Maybe it's 2000. If it's 2007, that seems so old. But you'd be right. You flip it over so that, you know, everyone knows if you're right or not. And when you're right, you leave the card there, and it's officially part of that timeline. If you were wrong, say you said it was before me, that it would somehow came out before 1986, then you'd be wrong. You'd discard that, and you'd get a new card. You can never have more than your starting number of cards. So if you started with, if everyone started with 5 cards, you can never have more than that. But you can keep having 5 cards if you keep guessing correctly. And this goes on and on and on until someone eventually loses all their cards. And I'm not sure, there were some people who, I never played it this way, but there's some people who ended up, I think, keeping the wrong cards in the timeline as well, which made it like super difficult and super long. But I don't think there is any kind of like alternate way of playing that includes cards you were wrong in the actual game. I wouldn't recommend doing that anyway, but it's not a bad game. The one thing I don't like about Timeline specifically, and like I said, there are different versions of it. There's inventions. There's, I think, one that's like general history. There's movies and music and a few more. And those are basically just the theme. So I think the movies and music one is probably the most easily accessible for a large group of people. The inventions one can be kind of super annoying. The history one is not that bad because there's a lot of really, really just general history that everyone's learned. It doesn't get like super specific in anything, but what I don't like so much about the cards in the game is that the cards are so damn tiny. They are really, really tiny. They are, I don't even know how to describe them. It's probably like almost like an inch by 2 inches. Maybe, I mean, a little bit bigger than that, but roughly that size. I keep wanting to say, like, oh, Robinson Crusoe, all the, like, invention cards in there, but that doesn't really help for people who have never played Robinson Crusoe, and I'm not well-versed enough to, off the top of my head, be able to say exactly how large a card is. But I can't remember if they're, like, Chimera, if that's the name of those cards, because there is a card pack that is somewhat the size of them, but a little bit too long. But basically, they're on the tiny side. And it makes it so that they are not able to write that much on the cards, and that the artwork, which is pretty nice, is just not as well visible just because it's so damn small. Now, there are other versions of timeline. And I'm not talking about other ones based on time and years. And also, I just say, this is generally, I like the game, but it can be really, really frustrating and annoying, depending on the theme, if you don't know anything about it. But it's definitely a type of game. It's this basic mechanic and design of, you know, higher or lower year or anything, makes it so that I'm sure we'll be seeing an incredibly large number of different timeline games, or, as I will be talking about, card line games, because it's just open to that, like a Munchkin game or that Flux game or whatever. So, the other games I played, I also played both, I think there are only two at this point, card line games. There's Card Line Globetrotters, which has to do with countries, and then Card Line Animals, which, guess what, has to do with animals. I got Timeline Inventions, I think, for really, really cheap, and that was fine, but I bought Cardline Animals because I love animals, and I just saw, just from the tin alone and looking at the back of it, I'm like, I really love this art on it. And I bought sleeves for the very small cards, because I asked the person who I bought the game from, I'm like, okay, what size sleeves are they exactly? And they gave me these, and they're like, okay. And I bought them. Then when I got home, opened card lines, I was very surprised and a little bit annoyed, just because I had the wrong sleeves now, to find that the card line cards are actually much bigger. They're about twice the size, but they're still smaller than any standard sleeve size I have, so I'm not even sure if there is. I'm guessing there has to be some sleeve size that fits the card line cards, but I don't currently have any. And even checking like Board Game Geek, where I usually would go to find out, oh, what card sleeves would you use with this? I didn't see any recommendation at all. Maybe there's something up there now, but when I checked, there wasn't. Anyway, the card line games are a bit more interesting. I think Animals is definitely an easier one than Globetrotters. But what is interesting about them, not only the fact that the cards are bigger and therefore nicer in my opinion, but they have more than one type of detail you can use as your main detail when playing the game. So with the Animals version, you have length, weight, and average lifespan. So, and length would equate basically like head to ass, not including tails for most animals other than lizards, I believe. And for birds, it's like head to feet, not with their wingspan. So, and the weight is weight, you know, and lifespan is lifespan. But that one's, I like it, one, because I really like the art, and I like the fact that it can always be a little bit different if, you know, depending on what you choose as your specific detail to focus on. I found that the average lifespan was probably the hardest, as there were just some surprisingly, there were some animals that were definitely living longer than I thought. I mean, even little ones, like, I guess I just assume because we step on them all the time, but the queen ants, I think, lived for like 12 years or something, which was a bit surprising to me. I always feel like bugs have a short lifespan in general, all bugs, and not just because of human murdering, but I would be wrong on that. Then there was like a bird that I was surprised to find out it lived for like 43 years, I think. I can't remember what it was. I want to say the dodo bird, but that is not right at all. And also, I mean, all these cards are nice in the fact that they are somewhat educational. You will get to know the average lifespan of an animal, or the average weight, or the average length. And also on the animals one, there is a little icon in the top right-hand corner of the cards, which tells you basically how in danger they are, or close in danger they are. And if there's nothing there, then it's just there's not enough information to give any kind of specific rough estimate. And then the Globetrotters one is basically countries, and your choices for that are population, then like gross national profit or something to do with money. What was the other one? I think it may be basically the surface size. And I only played that once. We did population, and we basically realized, the entire group, that nobody knows population of anything for the most part. It was a nightmare. I don't like that at all. That was not fun. Which was just like the inventions one, which was really super annoying because nobody knew when anything was invented, and everyone's like, really? That was invented then? It's a fun game. It's really simple. It's a quick game to play. Unless everyone's really, really dumb. If you don't have anyone getting anything right, then you're going to be playing forever. But it's a nice little simple game, and if you're with good people, it's fun to just make fun of the fact that nobody knows anything and that you're all just a bunch of idiots. But yeah, that's Timeline / Cardline. That was a thing. Then the other game I played, I finally played Shadows Over Camelot. I think that's what it's called, right? I'm feeling like there's one word. I was going to say, one murd. What is a murd? Maybe murd is in there. No, Shadows Over Camelot, which is a co-op game. And it's something I was really excited to play for a really long time. And then I still like playing it, but in all the things I've read and heard about it, no one ever mentioned it being a difficult game. And in my experience, most co-op games are really, really difficult, and I don't really care about losing. I'm much more of the belief and the feeling that board games are not about winning. They are just about the experience and, you know, playing with good people. That's why a board game is a much more, unless you're playing by yourself, reliant on good players than being a good and well-designed board game. The best board game in the world will be utter trash if you play it with the wrong people. But I played Shadows Over Camelot with good people. I just did not realize that the game was going to be so difficult. And I swore people were talking about how it was funny, too. That it was like Monty Python in terms of humor. I did not get any of that, either. That was just not in there. But I do love the fact that it is a game where there is a potential traitor. You don't know for sure if there will be a traitor. There was a traitor in our game, and it was somebody who had, there were like half of the people playing never played before, then the other half did, and one of the persons who has played a lot was the traitor, and he was just sort of, I at points thought it was maybe him because he kept talking about the traitor, but then I also thought, oh, he's actually trying to be kind of helpful with all of us people who have not played, so that, you know, maybe he's not the traitor, but he was the traitor, and we died. But I really like the game. I really like co-op games in general, and I thought it was fun, even though at a certain point in the game, I became the person who was just clearing off siege battles as they were re-put onto the battlefield. And the one thing about the game is that it really just is a much more brutal co-op game than I thought, in terms of just everything is just always out to get you. When it's your turn, you have to first do something bad. You have to take a bad action, which is either place a siege tower, something along those lines, like a little like catapult thing, a siege something on the battlefield. And if you ever reach 12 of those, if there are 12 on the board, that's an automatic loss. So on your first bad action, you can either do that. You can take one of the black cards, which will have something that can either affect one of the quests that you can put down face down that'll end up killing a quest, or you will get an Excalibur card thing, which will start affecting that quest negatively. Or there are other like special black cards that do a lot of damage, like maybe make everyone lose a life point, or somebody else can lose 2 life points, or other various not good things. And you can also, with your other action for your bad action, if you want, you can take a life point away from yourself. Everyone starts with 4. You never want to get down to 1, so it's okay to take life points early on or just when your health is fairly high. But if you're at 2, don't ever do it, because there are going to be points where cards are end up played that make everyone lose a life point or something that, you know, you're going to die if that was the case. So you want to try and avoid being at 1. So after you do the bad action, you have one of your good actions, which you can use to move to a certain tile of space. You can either battle one of the siege towers. You can do an action on a quest. Or if you are at Camelot at the round table, then you can draw 2 cards, 2 white cards, which are your basically good cards that have things like battle cards that give you more strength when fighting a siege tower, or they're Holy Grail cards, which you use when you're going to try and complete the Holy Grail quest. And there are other various ones. There's like a heroism card, which will make a quest the rewards increase, or even the rewards if you lose, they make those even worse. And what you're trying to do, I think you win the game. I'm trying to think of all the ways you can win the game, and I don't know if the only way is to get a full table of 12 swords and have the majority, 7, be white swords. And you get swords by completing quests. So, like the Excalibur quest, you get that, you get 2 white swords, then somebody gets Excalibur, and that person will always have +1 bonus whenever in combat. And then when you finish a quest, more so these main quests, not the little tiny ones that happen on the main like 4 tiled board, then those cards are flipped over, and it just makes the game harder. So that now every time that a Excalibur card would be pulled from the black deck, instead of it making the Excalibur move towards the bad part of the quest line, the quest board, then it just ends up adding another siege tower to the game. And that's basically what all the quests seem to do, the big ones that were outside of the main board. Once you finish them, or once they're completely lost, they get flipped, and then any time a card related to that comes out, siege tower, siege tower, siege tower. And if a quest is lost, then instead of getting white swords, you get black swords. And of course, if you get 7 black swords, the game is over. If you get, you know, the 12 siege towers, game is over. Everyone dies, game is over. We lost because of siege towers, which was finally, the last one was placed by the traitor. And you can call out the traitor once, I think 6 siege towers are on the board, or maybe 6, or if it's just 6 swords are on the table and at least one of them is black. But you're going to have more, you're going to have 6 siege towers by the time, I mean, well before you maybe even have any swords on your table. But yeah, we lost, but it was still a fun game, and that's where, I mean, that's the most important thing about any co-op game. Did I still enjoy having explain it? Yes, I did. Even though it was very apparent from the very beginning that it was not going to go our way. I love co-op games. I think more so than any other game I've played co-op wise, this is very, very co-op heavy. To complete a good chunk of the quests, you need to work as a team. Like with this Excalibur, because there are so many of those Excalibur cards that push the sword backwards, because it's basically on this like little pathway, and it goes from, I mean, it starts in the middle, and then to the bad side of the board, it starts getting lighter and lighter blue, and then the other one, it's starting to get more, you know, it's from yellow to orangey, so it's, you know, hot and cold, and you want to get all the way to the hot side. And avoid the cold. But every time you get one of those Excalibur cards, it moves back one space. So if you just go and try to complete that quest by yourself, there's a good chance that you'll lose progress, or you'll just end up negating the negative process that was made during someone else's turn. So that is something, that's just an example of where if you, say, had three people go on that quest, you can all three on your turns move the sword up three spaces. Each, and the way you would do that is you basically throw away one of your white cards. You discard one of them, and you don't show anyone. That's another thing, is that you can't tell anyone about certain cards. You can't tell anyone what cards you have in your white one, even though it's co-op. You can't tell anyone the black ones you have unless you like play them. But I really like the game, and I had a good group of people to play with too. We did work together. And the trader, while he ended up winning in the end, he was not a huge asshole to us new players. But yeah, that was Shadows Over Camelot. I'd recommend checking it out. It's not, it's a Days of Wonder game, so I think that would be enough to tell. I think that's enough for a lot of people to just say, oh, okay, I'll definitely check it out now, because Days of Wonder is, I mean, they've done Seven Wonders, they've done, I think they did Ticket to Ride. Small World is theirs, and I know there's more, but yeah, definitely another great little game, and it's for 3 to 7 players. I think probably, I don't feel like it's a game that scales differently. I think it would just be easier with 7 people, but, well, actually, I guess thing that would make it more difficult is that with the more people, the more bad actions that happen, so that would kind of maybe even it out a bit. But it would also make going on quests a lot easier, and people able to do multiple quests at a time. Then the next game I played was Corporate America, which, as far as I was checking, it doesn't seem to be available in many places. It might have been a Kickstarter game that was low print, because it doesn't seem to be in any of the like local shops, but it is available on Amazon for $40. I don't know if that's the retail price. So, yeah. But it's sort of, vibe-wise, makes me think of like, oh, this is sort of what a Monopoly or more of those casual type of board games would be for adults. Because you're basically, you go around a board. We played with 4 people. And the rule was you go around the board 4 times, not 4 times, 3 times, you have 3 rounds. And you're basically just all politicians. You start off the game by creating up to 3 businesses. You get business cards, and then you create them. And it would basically, when you hit the, not Wall Street round, the market round or something along those lines, then you basically are flipping over cards that have different icons on them, like energy or sin or finance or entertainment. And if you have, if one of your business has one of those icons corresponding to that one that has been faced, and everyone is flipping over one of these themselves, and you get money for that. It costs you money initially to create your businesses, but then you get money back every time you get one of those icons. And say it's your turn, and you're the first person to flip during that round. And I'm going to go find out exactly what that round is called, because I'd like to be a little bit, somewhat accurate. Not I didn't want to search for corporate American. Stupid me. This is the greatest part of the podcast, as you are all aware of. And okay, you don't even have that for me. I hate this. Board Game Geek was not even showing corporate America. This is why I don't even feel like talking about this game, just because it's like, oh, nobody's going to be able to find it. No, there you are. I spelled it right, and you didn't want to show up, did you? It's for 3 to 6 people. It's from Nothing Sacred Games publisher. I don't know exactly them. But okay, so you have the Wall Street phase is where you start your businesses. That's when you start your businesses. And that's basically where the game starts initially. And then it's a little bit different each time around. And then you move on to the Main Street phase, which is where you start flipping over consumer cards, which show you the various different, you know, kind of resources that would get you money. So if it's your turn and you flip over a resource card and it has, say, finance on it, and two of your businesses have finance, and you would gain $12 from it because they would give you 6 and 4 plus a $2 bonus for having the synergy of two businesses. You have a synergy that grows more and more as you have businesses with the same resource on them. And as we found out at the very end, you should really work on building up a very, very strong synergy. If you have a business with, if you have like 4 or 5 business cards with the same resource on it, you can make a lot of money. But then, say you would make $12 from that. People can pay you to flip it. And it costs $4 to flip it to get a new one. Then it jumps up by $2 each time until I think you can only do it up to 6 or 5 times. So people can say, okay, well, I'll pay you $4 each. Say it was a 4-player game. So they would all pay $4 each. We'll pay you $12, and then I would have to pay 4 of those bucks to flip it. And I might say, okay, because then I might still get something that I want, and I banked $8 on that alone. So I'm taking a bit of a risk, but at the same time, I'm potentially getting even a greater profit. Though at the same time, I could lose out, and they could all get something that they want, and it would work on their end. There's a bit of that kind of gambling and risk-taking in that day. And you do this for, you do this 8 times until all the spaces are filled, and then you get rid of all those cards. And then you move on to the campaign trail, where you then are, you flip over these various cards, which are basically campaign trail like issues that you would basically use it to run on your platform. And you have to use some of these if during the Main Street phase, one of the consumer cards or multiple you threw out were protest cards, and those are basically protests. And I still am unaware of what they do if you don't resolve them, because you sometimes can't resolve them if one of the campaign trail cards was not, if none of them ended up being able to resolve it. It didn't seem like they did anything, so I'm unsure of that. While on the campaign trail, people choose to run for president, and they run on a platform, and they pick 3 of the cards, and then they'll say, you know, well, this card would allow me to split up $15 between everyone. Well, if you contribute to my campaign, I will give you 10 of those $15. And then there could be another one that says, well, this one would allow $15 to be spread out between everyone who has energy resource. Well, I have this and you have this. If you contribute to my campaign, I will give you $10 of those. You know, and you're trying to do all that, because maybe there's some ones on there that would greatly affect you negatively, or they would greatly affect other people positively. And this is an interesting mechanic, but the first time when it was, I ended up running against another guy, and we had a decent campaign, and it cost a lot of money, and all that money goes away. And this is kind of what we were talking about after we finished the game, was that for being president, it just sort of costs you a lot of money if you're playing it that way. And it doesn't really seem to be worth it, because you don't get any kind of bonus. You don't get any money for being president. You just get, you know, all the, you get to choose the three campaign trail cards. That's it. So you can choose to screw over everyone and just make them all go to you. But even so, there's no other benefit to being president. You will get a Capitol Hill, you'll get an executive privilege card, which will give you some kind of ability that can affect people during, say, the Main Street phase or during the campaign trail the next time around. But overall, there's not that great of a benefit to being president. You know, it's not really worth it. And it kind of, especially when the person who was like so far behind ended up killing us all because they had huge synergy at the end and had $196. It's all about having the most money at the end of the game. That's how you win. So being president is kind of worthless, especially when our other two rounds, the second round is just sort of, there were two people running, but they didn't really, nobody contributed anything because the cards didn't matter. And then that happened again the last time where the cards really didn't matter and didn't, there's never going to be anyone who would, like, there wouldn't be two opposing view sets for those. So that person just ran unopposed. But other than that, that little seemingly odd rule that just seems to make the president worthless, the game is actually a lot of fun. It has that simplistic sort of Monopoly, whatever, basic, simple board game feel to it with the theme and just the overall kind of back and forth and screwing each other and, you know, trading somewhat and being like, oh, I will, bribing to an extent and just overall political nonsense. It's a lot of fun. It's a game I'd really like to play again sometime, though it doesn't seem to be fairly common. So I guess it was a Kickstarter game, but I'm hoping it gets reprinted, because it is a pretty fun game, and it's a simple game. It's a game that you could easily get anyone to play in. That was Corporate America. It's definitely another game to check out, and I don't think $40 is a terrible price. I mean, that could actually be the MSRP for it, too. I just am not exactly sure, because I can't find anywhere that just, well, I didn't search that well, but I looked at like Cool Stuff Inc. And a few other places, and Amazon was the only one that had it. I looked at local places like the Dice Dojo and other places, and nobody had it. Yep, that is Corporate America. Then two more games I played, I'll get through quick. I played card game Lunacy, which I recorded a video review of, and then I think I'm going to re-record that. So that will maybe be up by the time you hear this, but it could be up a day later tomorrow. Just not sure exactly, because who knows, I might still use the old one. I don't think the video is that bad. It's just sort of, I would kind of want to have it be a bit more focused, because one of the problems was that it just kept going out in and out of focus, the camera, which is kind of annoying to me at least. But Lunacy is basically like Speed, which is that classic card game that uses a regular deck of cards. You have your two draw piles. Everyone has five cards in their hand, and then a draw pile of 15 cards, I believe. And then there are the two draw piles of five cards, and then two discard piles, basically the plain space. And then you flip over those two, and then with your five card hands, you are trying to place a card that is either one higher or lower than the cards on the table. So if you flip over those two cards and they are a 10 and a 3, you know, you can play a 4 on the 3, then a 5 on that 4, 6 on the 5, etc. Or the other, you know, the same thing for the other number. And as you get rid of cards from your hand, you can take some from your draw pile. Your max will be 5 in your hand. You can wait to do it until like you're have no more moves, or you can just do it as you're playing. That's basically what this is, except for you're matching images, and each card has two images on them, and as long as one of the images matches, you can play the card. And one of the nice things is that the way they are set up, and they're cut in half, and one image is upside down, so that, you know, you rotate it, you'll always see one image face up. But on each side, each one of the images in the upper left-hand corner, I believe, they have both a small image of the top image and of the bottom image, so that if you perhaps are just focused on the top image, you will still be able to see, you'll know if you're not paying attention to the lower half of the card, what the other image is, so that you don't have to like look down at it. You can just see it when you're looking at the top card, which is nice. And then basically the way it works is it's 2 to 5 people. If you're playing with 2 people, you have 4 discard piles. 3, you have 3. 4, you have 2. 5, you have 1. And you're just trying to get rid of your cards as fast as possible. Be the first one to get rid of them, you win. There's no turns. You're basically just playing as fast as you can. And when everyone agrees that nobody can make any more moves, you can't bullshit that part of the game. You can't say, oh, no, I don't have any more moves. And you watch as the other people get ready to flip. And then you're like, oh, watch me do this and I win. No. Everyone agrees that they can't do any more moves. You all take one card from the the main draw pile. And then you play again, and if nobody can move, you do that again. You just basically do that until somebody loses all their cards. Really simple game, a great filler game, quick game, a lot of fun. Can get pretty hectic as you are trying to get to the same card. And whoever gets there first, whoever card is down first, that person won that battle, if you want to call it that. And it's just fun. I like those fast games. I kicked ass in it, won every time, because I'm a monster. And then I played another game, just the casual version, so I don't want to talk about it too much right now, but it's Incredibrawl, which was a Kickstarter game. And it's basically like rock, paper, scissors. You have your 3 colors that win in all the battles. You're trying to be the first to 10, basically, victory points. I think they're called something else, but they're victory points. And the way it works is that you have your cards that can beat other cards based on color, or if you're both using cards of the same color, the level, the number highest wins. But then you have to first, the lowest level, they have to play their act. They get to use their ability first. And not everyone will be able to use their ability, because their abilities are based on either P, W, or L. L means that if they lost the battle, they use their ability, which could then affect the battle and make it so that the person lost. I only play this with one other person, and it is definitely going to be very different with more people, because then there comes into play this whole like overall battle system or brawl system. And if, I mean, there's that, then there's also the W, which win. If that person wins, that ability comes into play. And then if it's P, it just comes into play. It doesn't have to, there's no specific thing it has to, that action that needs to be met or anything, that just comes into play. It's a simple game. There's a bit of just there's definitely a bit of randomness to it. I thought it was perfectly enjoyable. It's not the deepest game. It's not going to be for someone looking for a huge amount of strategy, just because there is that large degree of luck. I'm not sure how it differs playing in the other modes, where you can have more environmental cards that then come into play and affect things. And then there are additional rules, so I have to play it some more. But I just want to mention it because I didn't have a horrible time with it. I'm not sure if you can pick it up anywhere. I got off of eBay for like $5. I was like, oh, what's this? I saw it. I'm like, oh, nobody wants this, so I'll get it. It's not bad. What I do hate about it is that the card stock is really flimsy, and I need to put those cards in sleeves immediately, because I just hate the way they feel. They feel so cheap, and I don't like that about it at all. The components, I'm the actual like victory points and shit, that's fine, but the cards just feel awful. Ugh. But yeah, that is it as far as the games I've played. I do want to go over a few Kickstarters. There is 3 I'm going to go over really quick. You may have all remembered, you may remember me talking about a game called Westerly a while back. Well, they're on their third attempt at getting funded. Hopefully they get funded this time, because it does still seem like a very fun cooperative game that has a lot of nostalgic vibes towards Oregon Trail. It's got 6 days to go. It's at $22,429 with a goal of $29,550. So there's still a chance. It's definitely going to need a huge bump in the last like 48 hours, which does happen. Who knows? One of the things they change is that anyone who pledges for the Wagon Master pledge, which is, I think, $75, it's like the special edition of Westerly. If you pledge for that, then you automatically, with every one of those pledges and above all the higher pledges too, you get a bonus free copy of the game. So you'd get a second copy of the game to give away to someone if you want. So that's not a bad deal if you know anyone who would want one, or I don't know if you're a store wants two copies or something, whatever. But yeah, I would love to see that thing get funded, because I loved Oregon Trail. And the game looks, it just looks like fun. And it would be nice if they, like, I don't know if they're going to do a fourth one again. I mean, there is part of me that feels so weird about them creating their third campaign so fast after the second one failed. Like, it was like, oh, maybe you should wait and do something differently. But it was like, I don't even feel like they change anything. They're just like, oh, well, people weren't willing to pay then, so let's just do it all over again. Maybe there were too many other things they were kickstarting, so they couldn't pay, but now they will. But I'm still interested in the game. And now, a few ones that recently launched that I think y'all should check out. There's Stratagem, which is an abstract strategy board game. And one, I think the prototype components already just look great. It's just a very simple game where you're trying to you're collecting victory points by grabbing territories, and it sort of reminds me a bit of, I don't know if it's, not King of the Hill, but I'm immediately thinking of Tony Hawk, but that part where you're like, you're painting spots, and then you're basically, whenever you walk over space, you are claiming that space, and then if nobody walks over those spaces until your next round comes around, those all get flipped over, and then you get points from them. And then the next round, they will all, those spaces that you got points from will be removed, and you can earn points from them again. There are various tiles on there that give you more points for owning them. And there's a huge like 10-point tile right in the middle that everyone could vie for, but it might be a better strategy to just go after the smaller points and outside while everyone keeps going over, like just going over the same tiles and no one's getting anything. But it seems pretty simple and like a great, I mean, I think that's great with any abstract game, that it's just really simple that people can jump into, but there seems to be room for a decent amount of strategy, which I like. And as I said, I really like the design of it, and the components all look really nice. And they've already focused on helping make the game more accessible to people with certain disabilities, like color blindness, low vision, and short-term memory loss. So that is nice, and they're still looking to make it a good game for even other people, other disabilities. So that's something I always like to see. And then the other game is Linkage, a DNA card game. And what I like about this is that, first off, the final art looks great. I love the look of it. It's got a very nice, it reminds me of some of the work I've done with colored pencil on black paper. And I like that. It really pops. It has these nice, vibrant colors on this dark background. And it just looks really good. And also, it is a game that can be somewhat educational, which is nice. I really like the idea of, you know, video games or anything where you take something that is fun and you add in a bit of educational flavor to it so that you can learn something while having fun. Because learning is not always something that people want to do, but if you make it fun, then it's something that anyone can do, and that's a great thing. But it also, there's a like playthrough of it on the page, which explains it a bit, and it looks like it's just a game, ignoring all the other stuff and the theme of it. It looks like it could be a pretty interesting game. So I'm excited to check that game out. I talked with the creator a little bit, and I believe he said he's working on getting a print and play version set up so that people can actually play it. Because I've found that when telling people about Kickstarter projects, a good chunk of people are much more hesitant towards backing any Kickstarter project until they actually get to try it out for themselves. So I back a decent amount of board games, you know, and a good amount of them are just for a buck because, you know, I don't have the funds to back everything at full price. But a lot of people are not as willing to back something without playing it first. And I mean, even with me though, I'm more, I guess, trusting or supportive without doing all that. And also, print and play, I don't do that. I know that I recommended it to the creator because I know that people are into that. I mean, that's a way to get it out there too. But for me personally, I just don't love print and play. It just doesn't feel right because it's not going to be the way the final components feel at all. And it's just, it never feels good to me playing with print and play. It feels wrong. It feels cheapy. And I don't personally like it, but I was telling the creator, John, that he should, and I'm not going to even like his last name is like, I don't know, Kovu. I don't know. Don't hate me for that. But I was just telling him that he basically should set up something like that because people do like to play something before backing it. Though for me, I don't need that to back something because the only way I will back something is if someone sends me a prototype of their game to review and whatnot, which I may be getting the first one, which will be exciting because I would like to help projects get their word out there and all that stuff. And I just can't do print and play. I just can't. I avoided poop, even though I had it for other people and stuff. But yeah, DNA, it's a good-looking card game. I definitely recommend checking it out. Both those games, well, I think especially DNA, it's not in any danger of not being funded, but you should definitely, that doesn't mean you shouldn't back Linkage. It's already getting pretty close to its goal. And if you read the entire description, you will know that he dropped down the goal a little bit to make sure the game happens. And if it doesn't reach a certain number, I think 5,500 is the number that he looked at as like, this is how much I would need, but I am going to just make it 3,800 to be the goal so that if it doesn't make any of that other stuff, I'll just take it out of, he'll just take it out of his own pocket. So let's all help make Linkage a reality and then make it reach past that 5,500 mark so that he doesn't have to take any money out of his little girl's college fund. But yeah, definitely check that out. There is a post on the site, Kickstarter picks for this week. And those are in there along with a few more, just two more ones about fantasy coins, like coins you can use for board games. And these Icos building pieces, building not blocks, but they're just sort of these pieces that you can use to build items. But by the time you hear this podcast, that'll probably be over because there's, I think, 5 or 4 hours left on it at this point. So, yeah, that is it for today's episode of Tabletop Tales. I hope y'all enjoyed this show. And I just looked at the time and holy crap, this episode went on quite a bit longer than I was expecting. Once again, I'm your host, Marcus Nez. I will be looking into the whole Patreon thing in a bit about, you know, it's like, oh, I will start doing more videos if there are people out there who want to see them and are willing to pay like $1 a month, etc., to have things happen. And as also on the site, you can see just a really simple head of what the style would look for a potential webcomic that would also happen depending on Patreon business and whatnot. But those details will come out in the future, so I won't get into them right now. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Kush3, Instagram mkush. And, of course, everything is at pixelatedsausage.com. So go there to find everything and just tell your friends about it. Check it all the time. Just keep refreshing it and be like, oh, this is a hit. This is a hit. Go to all webs. Go to computers all over the world. Whenever you're in a Best Buy, just go to pixelatedsausage.com. Leave it on there because that will make a whole lot of sense. And then, of course, go to frontburner.net. That is frontburner without the E.net. FrontBurner.net. Register there. It's a great little site, and I would recommend registering it. I don't know. I already told you to register. Why am I telling you again? But go there. Check it out. Great little site. And we could use some company. Some more company. And then while you're there, check out the Sprite Stuff podcast hosted by Dean Stevenson and company. You can find that on iTunes by searching for either the Sprite Stuff or Front Burner. And then, of course, check out the Signed In podcast at signedinpodcast.com, the Sports Car Unleashed podcast at scunleashed.com, and Kicking Out at 2, that is Kicking Out, the at symbol, and the number 2. You can find all these shows on podcast. You can find all these shows on podcast. See, I've talked too much that I can't speak. And, of course, also check out the other podcasts I do, Pixelated Radio, which you can find at pixelatedradio.com. And you can find all those shows in iTunes, where you should rate, review, and subscribe to all of them, because that does help out a lot. And, yeah, that's pretty much it as far as I can't think of anything. It's Friday, so have a good Friday. And I don't mean because it's Good Friday, but just have a good Friday in general and a great weekend. Adios, everyone. I will talk to y'all again in a week. Well, not in a week, but, you know, next week. So shut up. I'm sorry for telling you to shut up. But,